Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors.
Online at sportingjournalradio.com.
Hi, welcome to the show. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for listening across the Sporting Journal Radio Network on this station right here, covering Minnesota, parts of Wisconsin, North Dakota, reaching into South Dakota and Iowa as well. You can also listen on demand anytime at sportingjournalradio.com or subscribe to that podcast and listen on the go wherever you get your favorite podcasts. We are in the Albert Lea area this weekend for the governor's fishing opener. We're down in the southern part of the state, hopefully staying dry while we can out there, but we're celebrating once again the traditional fishing opener here in Minnesota with the governor's fishing opener around the Albert Lea area. We're also filming for Prairie Sportsman, so watch for an episode coming up next season on Prairie Sportsman Television. Or listen next week as we recap our governor's fishing opener experience from the Albert Lea area right here on Sporting Journal Radio. We're also going to talk to Joe Henry about Lake of the Woods and also Mille Lacs and Winnie and some of the other lakes about around Minnesota, giving you some tips on how you can target walleyes this weekend. We'll also talk about what water clarity does for the walleye and how fishing in stained water can differ from fishing in clear water. So Joe's coming up a little bit later in the show. Also, Mike Kempnick from the Gentleman Forager will talk about foraging for morels, ramps, other wild edibles that you can find in the upper Midwest's forest, woods, and trees coming up here in just a second. This week's show brought to you by Lake of the Woods Tourism. This weekend, of course, on Prairie Sportsman, you can watch our trip to the Rainy River fishing sturgeon with Jamie Dittman. We had a great time up there at Rainy River Resort. We caught some big, big sturgeon. Watch it this Sunday night, 7:30 p.m. on Pioneer Public Television on Prairie Sportsman. There's some other viewing options as well. You can find out more on the Prairie Sportsman Facebook page or prairiesportsman.org. You can find out where you can watch it around the state on the other public stations across Minnesota, North Dakota, and into Wisconsin, South Dakota, and Iowa as well. Show brought to you by Prairie Sportsman, of course, Lake of the Woods Tourism, lakeofthewoodsmn.com, by Tazen Lake Lodge. If you want to chase giant lake trout and big northern pike in Saskatchewan, join myself. I'll be up there for five, six weeks this summer. So join us up at Tazen Lake Lodge in the northwest corner of Saskatchewan. It's unbelievable. TazenLake.com for more details. Or if you want to head over to Devil's Lake to that walleye fishery, HayBaleHeights.com. Haybale Heights can put you on fish, can put you up in their cabins. You can stay there, do it yourself, or go out on one of their guided fishing boats. Go to HayBaleHeights.com for more details. Now we're going to talk about foraging and finding some of the food that is growing in the ground and out and about in nature with Mike Kempnick, the Gentleman Forager, joining us once again here on the radio show. Mike, thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Brett.
It's a fun time of year right now, isn't it?
Absolutely. We've been all holed up all winter long and chomping at the bit to get out in the woods.
Everybody looks at spring as the time to go out and search for mushrooms. And obviously that's kind of what we're going to focus on right here. But you're the kind of guy that says, spring, there's stuff all year, all summer, all year long we can go out and find.
Yeah, spring is just that. It's a springboard for summer, right? It just gives you a little bit of taste, a taste of what's to come. But really from July until the first part of November is kind of the brunt of the best part of the season.
So everybody gets excited about morel mushrooms, of course. And I've seen a few posts on social media about finding some here and there. But for the most part, they're not quite here yet, are they?
Well, this is a very unusual weather year. Actually, we've had a couple of those in a row now, unfortunately. But yeah, I mean, the very cool temperatures that we've had, you know, even if we do have a few days of very cold temperatures, we normally get a week or two where we have some really nice temperatures, and we haven't really had much of that. So I'm always looking for when we get to that point where we have daytime highs in the somewhere in the low 70s and we have nighttime lows maybe in the 50s. And we just have not had very much of that, to speak of, maybe a couple, 3 days, you know.
It seems like every time we get one of those days, it's followed up by the exact opposite.
Exactly right.
Stupid. I was not happy about the snow that we got this week.
Yes, that was yet another slap in the face.
Yeah, so Mike Kempnick, our guest here, the Gentleman Forager, Sporting Journal Radio. Let me ask you about that because, you know, normally we're talking about, you know, fishing or hunting on this radio show. And this time of year, you talk about nesting birds and what snowstorms like that or ice storms or hail storms. They can really wreak havoc on a hatch each year. What happens to like a mushroom hatch like that if mushrooms are coming up and all of a sudden we get like up in the Northeast, they got 9 inches of snow on Wednesday?
Well, the sad reality is, especially for morels, and especially parts, I would say maybe the southern half of the state, it really shuts down any growth whatsoever when the temperatures get into the 40s and low 50s like they've been. It doesn't promote any growth. So you may have the mushrooms start to come up and then we get smacked with some cold weather and then they just never fully develop. They'll just remain at whatever tiny, tiny size, maybe even imperceptible. And they'll just never really recover. They may have a second flush. But when that happens, it's always going to be diminished by about half. So, you know, the first flush of the year, you're going to get the most mushrooms fruiting. And then when they flush again, and for morels, you might get two flushes because the season is so short. It's only about half as many mushrooms as the first flush is going to be. So the long answer to your short question is probably not going to be a real stellar year.
You talked about some of the temperatures that you like to wait for. I was asked this question the other day is, you know, what to look for. And everybody, you hear everybody's little sayings. Oh, I like to wait until the buds are the size of squirrel's ears, you know, or there's different ways that people, different little signs that people look for. Is there anything you look for out there other than temperature?
Well, you know, all of those signs, for the most part, unless you throw one at me I haven't heard before, are pretty accurate. Because really all they're doing is giving you the same signal as to what ground temperatures are. So, for instance, when an oak tree's leaves are about the size of a squirrel's ear, well, the ground temperature at 7 inches or so is probably in the, you know, low 50s range. Same thing for when dandelions start to go to seed. You know, those things are just another indicator of soil temperatures. And that's the same thing that we're looking for morels, is we want a soil temperature to be, well, in that 55 to 58 sort of range is when they'll begin to fruit. And then once that soil warms too much, then they're going to shut down for good.
And that's something that's, you'll actually take a thermometer and stick it in the ground and go about 4 inches underground?
Yeah, if you go 4 or 5 inches and take a reading, and if you see temperatures that are, you know, certainly if you see temperatures that aren't in the 50s, you can probably just put that thermometer back in your pocket and head home and watch a good movie.
And not just temperature, and talking about some of the other things that you look for, but there's specific trees is where you'll find these morels.
Right. So in the southern part of the state, it's mostly elms that the morels are going to relate to. We have a lot of elm trees, obviously. In the northern part of the state, we don't have a lot of elm trees, and we have a different kind of morel that grows up there, a little different species. And they'll, more often than not, they'll be around poplar or aspen. Now, that doesn't mean that you won't find any morels that could grow in an aspen grove or cottonwood sometimes you'll find along the river bottoms. But it's a bit like fishing or hunting, right? You want to go where you have the most chance of success, not where you might find that one northern in a 2-foot bay.
Right. And you won't always find them right up next to the tree trunk, right?
No, they absolutely can extend the full width of that root system underground. And a good way of sort of determining how far that might extend is to just look at the tree itself and imagine it was laying on the ground and you drew a circle using that perimeter. That's about how far the root system will extend. So, you know, on an adult tree, typically, I mean, you could find morels growing as far away as 100 feet from that tree.
Wow. Mike Kempnick, our guest here, Sporting Journal Radio. He's with the Gentleman Forager. We're going to talk more about foraging here in just a couple of minutes. I want to talk about ramps, too, because that's what I've been really seeing a lot of lately. And then we'll talk about some of the other mushrooms you'll be able to find as the temperatures warm up here in this part of the world. Also, we'll have Joe Henry on the way as we talk about the walleye fishing opener across Minnesota. We'll have have some tips, not just for Lake of the Woods and the Rainy River, but if you're hitting some of the other major lakes across Minnesota, as we spend the weekend in the Albert Lea area for the Governor's Fishing Opener. More Sporting Journal Radio on the way.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskie. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazon Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazonLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazon Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazonLake.com. That's TazonLake.com. Tazon Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan. Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Watch Prairie Sportsman Sunday nights at 7:30 on Pioneer Public Television, Thursday nights at 7:30 on KSMQ in the southern part of Minnesota, Saturdays at 2:30 on Lakeland Public Television in the north, or watch reruns Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Minnesota Channel, broadcasting throughout the region, or at PrairieSportsman.org. We're back, Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. I'm Brett Amundson. Thank you for tuning in across the network on this station right here. Also on demand, online at sportingjournalradio.com, and by subscribing to that podcast wherever you get your favorite podcasts. Talking foraging right now with Mike Kempenick, gentleman forager, also Forest of Fork in the Keg and Case market in St. Paul. And we had the chance to come down there and kind of check things out a little bit at the Wild Food Fandango. Of course, we filmed that episode of Prairie Sportsman out there. Mike, everything going well for you?
It is. We're really excited about our second annual, which this year will be actually on the grounds of Keg and Case. We weren't quite ready for that last year, as you recall. So, yeah, we're really excited to have 15 great chefs coming and creating the crowd-pleasing favorite wild food dish. And we have five really great bands coming to entertain folks and a free concert to follow. So, yeah, we're all really excited, looking forward to it. A great way to kick off the season.
When I was there last year during that Wild Food Fandango, you're right, you guys weren't quite ready inside there. But I've seen the pictures. I follow you on social media, of course. I've seen the pictures inside there, and it looks amazing. And you've got this giant, tell us about the giant glass case of mushrooms.
So that's it's certainly one of my favorite things is a 15-foot tall glass chamber that we, you know, it's a highly controlled environment where we're fruiting mushrooms before your very eyes. So it's a lot of fun to watch all of the mouths kind of open. And, you know, most people have never seen how mushrooms grow to begin with. And so it's a great educational tool. And it sort of takes the mystery out of where do these things come? How does this work? And so it's kind of half lab, half store. But yeah, we're very proud to be the first wild food grocer in America.
How are you, what kind of mushrooms do you have in there? How do you grow mushrooms in there like that?
Well, the mushrooms we grow are called saprophytes, and saprophytic mushrooms consume lignin and cellulose as their energy source, which typically would come from, you know, any plant matter. So it could be wood chips or sawdust. It could be straw or hay. And it depends a little bit upon the species of mushroom that we're choosing to grow, which substrate we might use. But essentially, mushrooms live in their food is a good way to think about it. So we introduce the organism into that sawdust or into that straw and allow it to grow. And when the organism gets big enough and colonizes enough, then we bring it into the fruiting chamber and provide it with the perfect sort of temperature and humidity and CO2 levels. And we fool it into thinking that it's just prime time to fruit.
You haven't perfected that morel growing.
Sadly, that's the holy grail. Morels are a different kind of mushroom. They're called a mycorrhizal mushroom, and they have a symbiotic relationship with those same vascular plants. And in the case of morels, the trees we were talking about. And so I have not figured out how to get a full-grown tree inside the 15-foot chamber. But if I do, I'm going to make some money on it.
So your store is the first one like it in America?
It is.
Wow.
Yes.
Well, tell our listeners exactly. I know we've talked about it a little bit, but tell us what you offer there.
Yeah, so it's kind of a one-stop shop. If you're somebody who spends some time in the woods or is a forager or thinking about foraging, we've got lots of great tools at your disposal and books of knowledge and lots of great staff to answer questions. We, of course, provide wild food products of all kinds. So whether that's, you know, wild mushrooms that we forage for, whether that's the mushrooms we are growing in our chamber, which typically are a wild strain. And we also work with a lot of local farmers that produce some really incredible specialty crops that you won't find at your local grocery store. And, you know, wild rice, we have 15 varieties of wild berries, I'm guessing 10 of which most of your listeners have maybe never heard of. And so it's just a very interesting variety of foods that are new and interesting to people, almost all of which have a super healthy component to them. And so I like it for that reason too. I'm a guy who loves to eat. I enjoy eating. Yeah. And it's great that I can eat really delicious, tasty food. And as a side bonus, it just happens to be really healthy for me.
Sure.
Yeah.
Well, it's a neat place. I'm excited to come down and check it out. If people want to find out,
thank you.
Like if they're listening and they want to see some pictures, they can find it online and on social media.
You bet. If you typed in Forest of Fork or Keg and Case, I'm sure you'll be barraged with a plethora of photos.
Mike Kempnick, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about foraging right now. And you mentioned all those berries that you're right. A lot of our listeners probably don't know all of them. And there's so many foods out there. And when you think about wild foods, wild edibles like that, there's a few basics, a few standards that come to mind. And it seems like it kind of goes ramps and morels and then the other mushrooms that...
and then all others, right?
So let's start with ramps, because that's what I am seeing people finding out there right now. I've seen a few people start to get some asparagus, but I think a lot of it's been, I don't think the wild asparagus has come up very well yet. But to start with ramps, tell our listeners what ramps are exactly.
Yeah, so a ramp is essentially a wild leek, and it has the interesting quality of having a flavor profile of both onion and garlic. Hmm. And it's completely edible from leaf to stem. It's really delicious. I mean, it's anything you can think of that you use onion and garlic in. Ramps would be like onion and garlic on steroids. And by that, I don't mean that it's overwhelmingly powerful in its flavor, just that it's a very... it's a very unctuous flavor profile. I don't think I've ever met anybody who's had ramps and didn't like them if they at least were open to onions and garlic to begin with.
And how do you identify them? Where do you look for them?
Well, it has a pretty broad leaf. It's typically 4 to 6 inches across. It looks very much like a table onion if you were to dig one up and look at it. As the rhizomes kind of hanging off, the dangling off the end there. It has sort of a burgundy color to it as it gets down towards the base. Where do you find them? They're typically in low-lying areas that hold a lot of moisture. They might even get a little bit flooded each spring. So you won't find them, you know, on the top of windswept ridges or anything like that. You'll kind of want to be down in valley areas. And the other thing is it's kind of easy because you can smell them usually before you can find them.
Really?
I mean, if you find ramps, there's usually a lot of them, and the smell can be really pungent. In fact, the ramp farm that we pick is a good friend of mine I've known since high school, and I got started picking there because one year I went up for opening a fishing, and he said, I don't know what this onion smell is every year, but I have to put up with it for a month and it's driving me nuts. And I looked around to realize you have 40 acres of wild ramps growing here, my friend.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm happy to help you control this.
So, I bet you are.
Yes.
So you find some, you harvest some. Is that something you're digging the roots out and trying to take the whole plant, the whole
shebang? There's a lot of debate that goes on all the forums and the boards. People are concerned, and rightly so, about being sustainable and how they harvest plants, especially because, unlike mushrooms, you absolutely can decimate the population to a point where it won't come back. So in the case of ramps, you know, if you have an area that's your area to pick, you really shouldn't take more than about 10% of the crop each year. It takes about 8 to 10 years for a ramp to grow to full maturity. And so if you're taking less than 10% a year, one can assume that you're not going to impact the total population of that crop. You know, some people like to say, don't take the bulbs at all, leave them in the ground and just take the leaves. But honestly, it's not necessary. If you practice what I just said and just take less than 10%.
And then once you take them home, how do you care for them? How do you like to cook them?
They're pretty easy to take care of, because you can just put them in a bucket of water and the root systems will continue to feed it and they'll maintain themselves quite well for, a week to 2 weeks. As far as preparing them, you know, the same way that you might prepare any other onion. If you want to do a slow saute on them to caramelize them and get some of those sugars released and sweeten them up a little bit, you can do that. If you were in the woods and you took a bite of one, it would be like a very strong table onion. For people who love onions and garlic, they really love that. For people that are a little more timid about that, it's probably a little overwhelming, the flavor. But you really can use them in the same interchangeable ways you use onion and garlic.
Well, I'm excited to get out there if we get some nice weather anyway. It'd be nice to get some out there and maybe prepare some with some fresh walleye after this weekend. Or maybe I'll just go down to Forest to Fork. I'm sure I could get some there at the
I was going to say, if you strike out, you can come visit us.
Very good. Mike Kempinick, thanks for being on the show. One more time, give me your website.
Sure, it's www.forest-fork.com.
Thanks for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Brad.
Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism is next. We'll talk walleye tips and tactics for this weekend. Also, water clarity versus water that's not so clear. Which one's better? More with Joe coming up. Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Watch Prairie Sportsman Sunday nights at 7:30 on Pioneer Public Television, Thursday nights at 7:30 on KSMQ in the southern part of Minnesota, Saturdays at 2:30 on Lakeland Public Television in the north, or watch reruns Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Minnesota Channel, broadcasting throughout the region, or at PrairieSportsman.org. Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Haybale Heights Campground and Resort. Haybale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Haybale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit HaybaleHeights.com. That's HaybaleHeights.com.
Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the Northwest Angle. Here, you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazen Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazenLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazen Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fish you ever had in your life.
At TazenLake.com. That's TazenLake.com. Tazen Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
This is Sporting Journal Radio. Thanks for tuning in across the Sporting Journal Radio Network. Now we're going to talk walleyes, since this is the traditional fishing opener weekend across the state of Minnesota. Some of the other states have been fishing already. Some fish all the time. We are excited in Minnesota. This is a celebration weekend, and we're going to talk to Joe Henry about opener right now here from Lake of the Woods Tourism on Sporting Journal Radio. And Joe, it wouldn't be the fishing opener if we weren't talking about rain and snow.
Yeah. You know, I'll tell you, up north, the forecast really wasn't too darn bad. I think that it was, mid-range temperatures and, a little bit of that possible in the forecast. But really, up in the North Country, it wasn't too darn bad.
Well, we're going to be down in Albert Lea, of course, for the Governor's Fishing Opener like we are every year. And last time I looked at the weather, and it could have changed from the last time I looked at it, but the last time I looked at the forecast, it was 90% chance of rain.
Oofta.
Which I'd say there's a slight chance we might get a little wet out there.
Yeah, and it's unfortunate. You know, people, I've spoken to some people who they kind of expect not so good weather on the opener just because there's been so many openers that it's sunny all week and then all of a sudden Saturday rolls around and it's raining out.
Yeah, at least we're not talking about ice on the lakes this year.
Yeah, which is nice. You know, we got a couple of chunks floating around on Lake of the Woods, but I mean, for the most part, the majority of the lake is ice free. And I think by the opener, the whole thing could be, ice free. And, it's a fun time, right? Because, in Lake of the Woods, I mean, we're so far north that, the water temps are still in the low 40s. And, there's still going to be a lot of walleyes left in that rainy river post spawn. And on parts of the lake where they spawn, there's a chance that maybe they haven't even spawned yet.
Oh,
so,
sure.
Because they spawn at different times based on where their spawning grounds are. People always think of the rainy river for where the fish spawn, and there's a good population of walleyes that do their deal there. But, we have 65,000 miles of shoreline on Lake of the Woods, and there's lots of other places they spawn too. And that's actually a really good thing because the diversity of the spawning habitat makes it so that, let's say that everybody, a whole bunch of walleye spawn in the rainy river, and all of a sudden we get really, really ice cold rain and weather that cause that water temp to get real cold in the river and kills all the eggs. Sure is nice to have that, diversity of spawning areas, isn't it?
65,000 miles of shoreline. Did I hear you correctly?
Yeah. Well, you think about it. Lake of the Woods is a big lake. We share it with the provinces of Manitoba and Ontario, and there's 14,552 islands, as well as a very big lake, which is natural shoreline. So yeah, 65,000 miles of shoreline. And that's also why, not only from a spawning perspective, but also just from a fishing perspective, you can see why it's so much fun working shorelines and going fishing because, you could fish a whole lifetime on Lake of the Woods and not fish at all.
Yeah, that's insane. And it's nice to have all that habitat, like you said, because we did get some weather. And this time of year, you always worry about some of these spring storms when it is spawning season or, say, nesting season for pheasants or waterfowl or whatever. And we got that weather. Earlier this week, and I had a buddy of mine, Jason Markla from Bank Brewing. He was up in the northern part of the state, up around Duluth up there on Wednesday, I think it was. They got 9 inches of snow over there, Joe.
Isn't that something? Yeah, I know what you're saying. That's it's Minnesota for you, and it's spring, and you just got to roll the punches. I'll tell you what, I think that, with that cold water this year, I think that it's going to be good to slow down that presentation. And, whether folks are using a Lindy rig or jigging or whatever the case might be, I think that it's going to be, and that water's still pretty darn cold. It's almost like you're ice fishing them.
Yeah, and I cannot wait. I've been looking forward to this weekend for so long. And so many people out there, it doesn't matter what the weather's going to be. Guys are going to be out there fishing. Guys are going to be out there at midnight. And maybe they won't be out as long if the weather is cold and rainy, but they'll be out there, Joe.
They'll be out there. It's a tradition, like you say. And for a lot of folks that do the Minnesota Fishing Opener, it's a tradition. It's kind of like the deer hunting opener. They get a group of a family together, a group of gals, a group of guys, and it's the one thing that they really look forward to each and every year. It's also interesting that there's a lot of people that go fishing on the Minnesota Fishing Opener that really don't go fishing much the rest of the year in some cases. It's kind of, I've heard some people call it amateur weekend.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of a funny term, but I think it's great because if it's a tradition like this to get people on the water more, it's wonderful.
Absolutely. So a guy, Joe Henry, our guest, by the way, Sporting Journal Radio. If a guy's going out this weekend, it is a little bit colder. You started to talk about a little bit slowing down that presentation. What are you going to start with this weekend when he had hit the water?
Yeah, well, I'll tell you, and I'll speak specific to Lake of the Woods and the Rainy River. The first thing I would do is I would put on a jig and minnow. And in fact, specifically, I'd use a jig and a frozen emerald shiner. What I would do is I would take a good sized jig head, and you know, I'd have to decide first off if am I gonna target the Rainy River, because I promise you, I know there's walleyes in the Rainy River because our sturgeon anglers this past week have been catching a ton of them. So if I'm gonna target the Rainy River, there's a lot of current right now. I'm gonna make sure I got some 1 and maybe even 1.5 ounce jigs with me, just to make sure that I got a good angle of the dangle. I got a lot of control in that heavy current, and I would be going that route. I'd probably start out with a jig that would be a combination of, I kind of like that gold jig that's colored with the glow white and the pink, you know, something like that. That's what I would start with. And the way I'd hook my minnow, I would take that frozen shiner and I would hook that jig hook through its mouth out its gill. I'd slide that minnow all the way up to the ball of the jig, you know, the head of the jig. And then I would take that hook and hook it through the side of the minnow about halfway back. That way, when I'm jigging with that minnow, if those fish are sluggish and they're light biters, you know, I got that hook halfway back in that minnow. I got a much better chance of hooking that walleye than if I had that hook through the lips of a minnow. That's what I would do, by the way. And, you know, if I was out in the lake, Brad, the only difference would be if I was out on the lake fishing them, I'd anchor up. So I'd be, you know, not moving. And then I would simply go to a lighter jig because you don't have the current out on the lake.
Oh, sure. Well, every so often, it seems like every week something gets said on this radio show that would make a great band name. The angle of the dangle.
Yeah. Well, and I'll tell you, the reason I talk about the angle of the dangle is because it's interesting. You know, there's times like when I'm spring fishing on the Rainy River, you know, we have that spring season that goes through April 14th. So when I'm doing that, there's many times where I will, you know, instead of anchored up and fishing right over the side of the boat, what I'll do is I'll pull my anchor and I'll work my way up current real slow. And now all of a sudden my jig will be kind of trailing behind the boat just a little ways. Use a bigger jig. What I'll do is I'll pull that jig forward in the current and I'll drop it back. When I drop that jig back, it hits that bottom thunk, and I'll pull it forward and I'll drop it back slow, controlled thunk. And a lot of times when I drop it back, that thing stops prematurely. A big walleye picked it up. See? So sometimes by having a little bit, instead of vertical, if they're not doing it that way, then what you do is you can, in the river, especially in the river, you can start working your way upstream a little bit. I will tell you that, you know, a lot of people would be used to drifting with a jig and a minnow. Now that can certainly work, but for some reason on Lake of the Woods, those fish really like it when you're anchored up and you're stationary and you're going straight up and down. I think a couple things for that. Number one, the walleyes on Lake of the Woods move around a lot. They seem to be roamers. So they're going to find you if they're in the area at all. Secondly, I think that you almost create your own ecosystem under that boat. You know, if you got, you know, 2 or 3 anglers, or if you're on a charter boat, you got 6 anglers, you know, fishing. Well, now all of a sudden between the bounce in the bottom and between the different jigs moving around, between the frozen shiners that you might set your hook on a fish and that the frozen shiner comes off, there's scales, there's scent, you're catching a few fish, you know, the fish are fighting. I mean, all of those things mean life and activity. And oftentimes life and activity in a body of water will attract other life and activity. And pretty soon you kind of create that ecosystem under your boat where, you know, you got things going pretty good. Many of the charter captains will tell me that fishing typically is actually better after about a half hour of being set up than it is right away when they get there.
You talk about that ecosystem. I've been hearing some stories lately about videos of seeing guys catching walleyes. And as they bring walleyes in, there's other walleyes chasing those walleyes. And then when they go to net their fish, they end up netting 2 or 3 walleyes when they do it.
Oh, that's crazy. Yeah. I've never had that happen. And, that's interesting. I wonder why that's happening. I hear that with bass a lot, that you can see bass trailing. I don't hear as much with walleyes. And I wonder, is that a thing that's bait related, or would that be where somebody caught a nice female and those males are flying up trying to hit her stomach and get those eggs out?
That could be. I have no idea. You know, we obviously have seen it growing up on a musky lake. When we catch crappies, we end up, you know, we'll end up catching a musky that'll chase the crappie up, or I've seen pike chase other pike around too, but I'd never heard about it with walleyes either. That's Joe Henry from Lake of the Woods Tourism here on Sporting Journal Radio. We're in Albert Lea for the Governor's Fishing Opener. We've got some more walleye fishing tips if you're heading out around the state of Minnesota. Coming up next, more with Joe Henry on Sporting Journal Radio. Sporting Journal Radio is brought to you in part by Pioneer Public Television, producer of Prairie Sportsman with myself, Brett Amundson. Prairie Sportsman celebrates our love of the outdoors as we hunt, fish, and recreate while working to protect our valuable natural resources. Watch Prairie Sportsman Sunday nights at 7:30 on Pioneer Public Television, Thursday nights at 7:30 on KSMQ in the southern part of Minnesota, Saturdays at 2:30 on Lakeland Public Television in the north, or watch reruns Tuesdays and Thursdays on the Minnesota Channel, broadcasting throughout the region, or at PrairieSportsman.org. Hey, anglers, looking for a destination where walleyes, fresh air, and fish fries are a way of life? Look no further than the famous waters of Lake of the Woods. From Bedette and the Rainy River to the main lake up to the northwest angle, here you'll enjoy the best walleye catch rate in the state. Maybe you'll pursue world-class sturgeon, pike, or muskies. Plus, you'll find lots of full-service resorts offering charter boats, delicious meals, and lots of Minnesota nice. Come experience the walleye capital of the world. Come experience Lake of the Woods. Catch the details at lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
Now is the time to start thinking about chasing big walleyes on Devil's Lake. Get on the fish at Hay Bale Heights Campground and Resort. Hay Bale Heights makes it easy for you to make memories on legendary Devil's Lake with guided fishing and lodging packages. Or bring your own boat and rent one of their cabins on East Bay. Hay Bale Heights offers a private marina, fish cleaning station, and the opportunity to relax and enjoy your bucket list trip to Devil's Lake, North Dakota. To book your trip, visit haybaleheights.com. That's haybaleheights.com.
If trophy lake trout and monster northern pike are on your list this summer, book a trip to Tazen Lake Lodge in northwestern Saskatchewan.
Everything from numbers to big fish.
See pictures, videos, and more at TazenLake.com.
This is quite the fishery.
Our five-star chef will feed you well after a day of chasing giants on Tazen Lake.
Dream come true.
Get rates, dates, and more of what you can expect.
It could be the best fishing you've ever had in your life.
At TazenLake.com. That's TazenLake.com. Tazen Lake Lodge is a proud partner of Tourism Saskatchewan.
You're listening to Sporting Journal Radio.
It's Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking about walleye opener this weekend, fishing on the Rainy River in Lake of the Woods. And Joe, I've heard a lot of guys, you know, where I'm at in western Minnesota, the go-to is, and a lot of it's shore fishing with the river and some of the lakes. Guys are pitching jigs with tails on them. And I know up on the Rainy, I've heard of a lot of guys having success pitching jigs up there with like paddle tails and things like that. Artificial baits work up there too.
They work really good. In fact, you know, you think about it, in the spring of the year, it's notorious for people putting on those great big, the B Fishing Moxies, the Berkeley Plastics, whatever brand, you know, the VMC, whatever your favorite brand is, they got some big plastics now with the ribs on them, you know, that give some texture and vibration, the paddle tails, the twister tails, and, you know, putting on one of those in a, you know, like a white and a pink or a chartreuse, orange and chartreuse. I mean, there's different color combinations, but yeah. And here's the thing too, when you're in that current and you're in that stained water, that paddle tail or that twister tail, but specifically the paddle tail, that adds vibration. And that allows that walleye to find that from a further distance because that vibration in the water affects that walleye's lateral line. So even that walleye maybe can't see it, it can feel it. And, you know, that lateral line detects when you feel that vibration coming through the water for a walleye, that means a possible meal. So that gives them one more way to hone in. The other thing I should mention, too, is whether you're using live bait or whether you're using, artificial on a jig, there's nuances to jigs, Brett. You know, if you remember when you, myself, and Jamie Dittman were fishing, you know, a couple of years back for the spring season, I had them dialed in pretty good. And the jig I had on, I had a spinner in front of the jig.
Adding a little bit of
vibration there. The other thing is, so, there's Whistler jigs that have propellers. There's jigs that have little spinners in the back. Sometimes jigs have rattles in them, built-in rattles, or you can add a rattle to a jig. And believe it or not, in that stained water, it's amazing how oftentimes that rattle will be that little bit extra that'll get you a couple extra bites. So there's different things you can do. But, you know, the big thing is, like any kind of fishing, when you're fishing with somebody, try something different from your partner. If you're going to use an artificial, have them use live bait. You know, if you're going to use a chartreuse, maybe have them start out with pink and white. You know, mix things up until you dial it in and figure out what those walleyes want that day. And that in itself, just paying attention to the little things, is going to make a better day in the water.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio, talking walleye fishing for the opener here this weekend. And let me ask you this question, Joe. This is slightly off topic. You brought up stained water on Lake of the Woods, and I saw a discussion. I briefly jumped into a social media discussion about walleyes on lakes with really clear water and lakes that have gotten clearer over the years and some that don't. And I brought up the fact that I interviewed Tom Landwehr a few months ago, and we were talking about Mille Lacs, and we were talking about some of the issues there, and you know, we brought up zebra mussels and things like that. And he said, honestly, the problem started with the Clean Water Act back in the 1970s, which I'd never heard that before. And I mean, it makes sense, but it's interesting when if you go back that far and start talking about issues with that lake and water clarity. And then he brought up, well, those lakes in southwestern Minnesota and southern Minnesota that are in ag country that get some of the runoff creates darker lakes. That's why some of those lakes are halfway decent walleye lakes in that part of the state, which you don't really think of that part of the state as great walleye fishing. They're shallower, they're warmer, but that darker color, I think, helps them down there. So that stained water, that's got to, you think that helps you out up on Lake of the Woods for the walleyes?
Yeah, so I got a couple comments to that. So I'm part of that Lake of the Woods input group for the DNR, and we had a guest presentation from a biologist, and you know, she was actually explaining to us that she also saw, you know, Mille Lacs Lake cleaning up well before the zebra mussels entered the lake. And you know, part of that was that Clean Water Act. Well, they went around the lake and cleaned up all the septic systems that were dumping into the lake. And when so there was an immediate change with the water clarity once that got corrected. And then on top of it, the zebra mussels came, you know. So, yeah, there's a couple of things that cause that water, that lake, to get clearer. And, you know, one thing about Mille Lacs, I mean, they're good neighbors to us, and they're another big walleye lake in Minnesota. You know, that's gin clear water. That's really clear water. And, you know, you fish that lake differently. I mean, if I was going to be fishing, I fish the Minnesota Tournament Trail, and which is a walleye trail of tournaments. And I fish Mille Lacs on occasion, and I've fished my whole life growing up in central Minnesota. You know, Mille Lacs is an excellent walleye lake. And you know what? If I'm fishing Mille Lacs, I'm using a Lindy rig right now. And I'm going to probably use a Lindy rig with a 8-foot snell. That snell is probably going to be about 4-pound fluorocarbon. I'm going to use a small bead and about a number, probably a number 6 octopus hook and a leech. And if I'm not going to use a leech, I'm going to use a minnow. But I'm gonna work a Lindy rig in that clear water, and there's going to be fish to be had in that lake. But boy, I'll tell you, do you ever have to fish a clear water lake like that differently? And you know, the other lake that's gotten very, very clear is Winnebagoche, because there's zebra mussels there as well. And you know, in fishing tournaments over the years, the spots that I fish on Winnie have actually become different because of the gin clear water. It's totally changed. So when you ask about the stained water and that sort of thing, whether it's Lake of the Woods or other lakes, yes, I think stained water is easier to fish because, you know, for instance, when I'm talking about those great big jigs and pounding the bottom and stuff, you know, I don't think I can get away with a big jig like that on Mille Lacs typically. You want to go more finesse or any clear water lake. But on Lake of the Woods with that stained water, you can go bigger. You can do things like hook on a frozen emerald shiner and then hook it back through the back again. So it's on there kind of crooked. They don't care. On a real clear lake, well, I tell you, the color of the bead, the color of the hook absolutely make a difference in how many fish you're going to catch that day. That's how fast it is. So you do have to kind of pay attention. The other thing, too, is when you get a shallow lake that got some stain to it, oftentimes that'll heat up quicker. And, you know, if a lake's heating up quicker. And the other thing, too, Brett, is, you know, when you talk about the southern lakes, they're typically shallower. Yeah. And naturally, a shallow lake's going to be warmer.
Yeah. 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 So Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. It's funny. I know I've told this story a number of times, Joe, but I went up first time I went to Lake of the Woods, and I was hosting a bus trip full of guys out of one of the radio stations I worked at. And we got up there and the guide's like, all right, yeah, we're going to go out there about 8 o'clock and we'll probably pick you up at about 4. And I'm thinking to myself, man, you know, I grew up fishing. I feel like we should be out there at like 6 a.m., and then we should probably be out there until about 8 o'clock at night, you know, get that early morning, get that sunset bite too. And at the end of the trip, I finally realized Lake of the Woods is a pretty good day bite.
Yeah, it is. Well, that's that stained water. You know, I remember that one of the first times I went up there, I remember overhearing a table of old timers, some locals saying, you let those young guys get out there early. Let's have another cup of coffee.
That's about right. That's about right.
It's true because, you know, and that's one of the things, you know, from a tourism perspective, it's so nice because, you know, you don't have to be fishing at the golden hour necessarily, which people call the golden hour, the first hour of the day and the last hour of the day because it's low light. And, you know, you think why are in a Clearwater lake, why is that low light? Why is that such a good time? And the reason for it is, just instinctively, any fish, including a walleye, is going to expend as little energy as it can to feed. it's a natural, you know, living thing that that'll help them live longer. And if it's real clear, sunny day, the prey see the walleye coming a mile away, and they've got to chase and chase and chase before they can catch. Well, you know what? When it's lower light, the walleye's eyes, those great big eyes of those, they can see better in that lower light condition than, let's say, a perch or a minnow. And they can just sneak up on them quicker and have an easier meal. So that's why that phenomenon is going on for the most part.
Joe Henry, our guest, Sporting Journal Radio. Just a couple of minutes left here talking about the walleye opener here this weekend. We talked about some different tactics from jigs to even Lindy rigs to pitching jigs, trolling, vertical jigging. But guys will be running cranks up there too this weekend, won't they?
They will. Yep. And, you know, cranking is so funny because, you know, for a long time, there was kind of this misnomer that, you know, in the water is super cold. And you know, slow down and cranks, you know, you just can't do them. But I've seen exceptions to that rule over and over and over again. And, you know, absolutely, you run that crankbait at about, God, if you can go 1.5 miles per hour and go really slow with like a shad wrap or kind of a slow wobble and bait, that can be a really effective way to catch fish. You can cast a crank. You could just troll that long line it behind a boat in shallower water. Or if you're going to get down a little bit deeper, of course, people will either, you know, work off of a bottom bouncer with a 6-foot snell, or you can use a snap weight, or you can simply put it off of lead core if you're going to be targeting walleyes a little deeper. But slow down. You know, don't go real fast in this cold water. That 1.5 to 1.8, I would target in those speeds. And you're going to catch fish. The other thing too is, you know, when you're trolling for walleyes, you're going to catch everything. You'll catch panties, bass, pike, the whole ball of wax. So it's kind of a neat deal. But yeah, especially too, the other thing, Brett, I'll say is, if you're having a hard time finding fish, don't be afraid to pull a shoreline. Don't be afraid to slide up in 5 feet of water. Slide out to 15. See where those fish are at. What's happening? You know, sometimes when those fish are pull spawn, they're not going to be grouped up and schooled up. They're going to be scattered out. And that's where trolling can be very effective to help us more fish in the boat.
I'll tell you what, if I was up on the Rainy this weekend, I'd have a hard time not fishing for sturgeon too while I'm up there. But if guys are heading up to the Rainy or Lake of the Woods, what kind of limits you got this year?
Well, you know what, it's our limit for the summer season is the same as every year. It's a combined limit of 6 fish up to those 4, combined being walleyes and saugers. But, you know, up to 4 of those can be walleyes. So you can get 6 fish, up to 4 can be walleyes. And then, of course, our natural slot limit that we've had in place many years applies. 19 and a half to 28 inches, you must put back in the water immediately. You can keep all your fish under 19 and a half. You can keep one walleye over 28 inches per day.
When we did that show up there, Joe, for Prairie Sportsman, interviewing the old timers that have been on the lake forever, every single one of them mentioned that when they put that slot in, that it was one of the best things that ever happened up there.
Oh, man, I'll tell you. Yeah, you know, it's amazing. You know, I remember, if you remember Mike Crewman of Border View, he used to own Border View back in the day. You know, he was talking about, heck, when somebody caught back in the day, a 25, 26 inch walleye, everybody down there taking pictures and things.
Right.
Now somebody catches a 29 incher and people can out of the carry less.
That's right. Happens all the time. All right, sir. Well, if people want to plan a trip, maybe they want to get up there yet this weekend, or just plan their summer trip to Lake of the Woods, where can they find out more info?
Lots of info on our Facebook page, Lake of the Woods Tourism. Otherwise, check out our website, and that's lakeofthewoodsmn.com.
You've been listening to Sporting Journal Radio, the Midwest's radio home for the outdoors. To listen to the show again, go to sportingjournalradio.com or download the podcast in your podcast app or iTunes. Find us on Facebook. Search for Sporting Journal Radio.